is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here today. Superintendent Jared Cordner of Roseburg Public Schools, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, my pleasure. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm sure that things are continuing to shift and shift frequently. A lot of people asking about the current plan for Roseburg Public Schools in terms of distance learning or in-person classes, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I guess I'll start by saying what we do know is returning to school is undoubtedly an important component for the healthy development of our kids. It's important that we design a plan that prioritizes the safety of our students and our staff and our community. And we know that decision-making on getting our schools reopened should be driven by public health and science and not by politics. I will say that we've worked closely with the Oregon Department of Education, the Oregon Health Authority, and also our local public health authorities. We've also sought some input from our parents, our staff, and our kiddos, and in doing so, we've developed a plan that should give parents, again, it's draft plan, but should give parents and students some choice in terms of the return to school. Our current plan does, and I would emphasize it is draft at this point with some of the things that continue to change, has our elementary students returning 5 days a week and provides an option for parents that aren't comfortable in the return to do a full remote learning option. Our middle and high schools are scheduled to return to a hybrid model, which would be a two-day-a-week model. Combination of in-person and remote learning. That would be 2 days a week in person and 2 to 3 days remote. It would be an interesting schedule. It would be a block schedule, 4 periods a day. That would reduce the amount of contact kids are having with one another. And essentially, 1 year of coursework would be done in that semester in a block period of time. So kids could get a total of 8 credits in the year.
So really, their classes would be structured very differently.
It's quite different. I've talked to a group the other day. The shifts we're talking about making in a normal year, if we're going to change the high school block schedule at RHS, for example, it's a year to two, maybe a two-year process in a normal timeline. So this is different. We're looking at 6 weeks in doing this. We know kids will come in with some learning loss already in the fall. And so, you know, getting a year of algebra or French or whatever it might be in that first semester is going to be a lift for us.
Now, I would think some subjects, and maybe it depends on the kid or their interest or their ability to deal with the subject. I mean, if you, the idea of getting a year of algebra that quick to me doesn't sound all that appealing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the if there's any silver lining with this schedule that we're hoping to run this year, it would be that currently, kids can get 7.5 credits in a normal year. It would be 8 credits available for kids. And that the suite of learning in terms of the opportunities, all the CTE vocational ed opportunities, all the electives could still happen. So we think there'll be a draw that kids could have a full experience, but it would be a very different year of learning, much more compressed in that block schedule.
So what could cause this to shift?
Well, we've seen this already. There literally have been shifts daily, maybe too much, but weekly there have been shifts. We continue to receive updates, adjustments, revisions from the Department of Education and the Oregon Health Authority that have required us to modify some significant portions of our planning. We received one last week, and it was relative to cohorting, which is this idea of keeping a stable group of kids together. It's put into question some of our secondary plans because the guidance last week, this was Wednesday, was that students can't have contact with more than 100 students within a week. So although we feel like that would work in the 4-period day, there's some questions about lunch, what happens there. You know, we're going to receive some additional information from the Department of Education this afternoon. So back to your question about what could cause shifts, there's lots of ideas about how to proceed safely, and those ideas all shift or cause us to rethink about our plan.
And I suppose at all levels, whether it's elementary or middle school or high school, each part of the process or each area age-wise has got different dynamics to it. When you talk about lunch,
you know, the older kids have more options. The younger kids are just sort of given their lunch. There's things like that. Maybe you have to shift that. Maybe you just deliver lunch to their room or whatever.
Yeah, and size matters. I mean, we've, you know, obviously the by design or elementary classes are more of a cohort model where that classroom teacher is delivering instruction to those kiddos. But you think about the high school, even in our hybrid model, which is essentially two groups coming. We'll have a Monday-Thursday group and a Tuesday-Friday group, more like a college schedule where you have a Tuesday-Thursday class, for example. And I can talk about reasons that's probably a good idea. We still run into issues at the high school of probably around 225 kids per lunch, even in that split lunch. So 100, the elementary, it's a little easier to do with the size of our current elementary schools as opposed to RHS.
And then you have elements that you would probably have to change. And I don't remember how it has been structured in normal times, whatever those were. But in terms of kids that would normally be able to leave for lunch, that probably changes too.
It does change. The first, if you've seen the blueprints that were developed by the Department of Education, the first three sections are really on public health and safety. So we have to rethink kind of our traditional modeling around movement and mobility, students leaving campus and coming back, to try to meet the requirements around stable cohorting. And again, that is the intent of that is around safety, that in the event that there is a confirmed case, that the contact tracing component can happen within those cohorts.
So with all the uncertainty, a lot of parents are especially concerned with elementary, about the impact that it might have on them if they have a normal 9-to-5 job, kids are at school, and you've got some daycare maybe after school, before the parents come home. How do you address that part?
Yeah, I would acknowledge this is a very real and important concern for many of our families. I've heard from many of our families about this. Our current plan does provide an option for the return of our elementary students. And I've said before, we really want to make sure our decisions are really based on the health and safety of our kids, our staff, and our community. The current plan, assuming we could go with this plan, does provide a return, an option for parents to bring their students back. And I think that's an important consideration as we think about school reopening. Oftentimes, and I've got kids in different grade levels myself, our secondary students and our parents are oftentimes more comfortable with students doing some distance learning as they're older. But if you have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old at home, then chances are you're going to be at home with those kids. And so that was a consideration in the development of this plan, is to have our elementaries operating.
And even with the in-person elementary classes, if you have those, with parents having the option of being able to have their kids learn from home, then how do you have teachers managing the kids that are in front of them in the room and the ones that they're supposed to be teaching online or interacting with? How do you make that schedule work?
Well, at the elementary, what we would have are dedicated kind of distance or remote teachers that would have a stable group of kids, their class. And so the classroom teachers at the elementary level that have students in person wouldn't also have the distance kiddos. So they would just have their stable kiddos. I mean, their normal class, and you'd have a class to be virtual for those parents that aren't comfortable yet bringing kids back. At the high school level, it's not uncharted territory, or the middle school level. Really, this has been the primary mode of education in our post-secondary schools, our colleges, on that Tuesday, Thursday, where you're getting that in-person instruction. And then, a portion of their learning is done online. And that would be more of that, what we see happening in some high schools across the country and middle schools, but particularly at the post-secondary level. You certainly need a high-quality learning management system to make that work, and that's something we've invested in this year. Again, wish I had more time to work with staff on the rollout, so we'll literally be kind of building that plane as we fly it this year, but feel confident that we'll be able to provide that support.
So if you had some teachers dedicated to the distance learners, some dealing with the kids that were in class, it's unknown until you get there how many of each you're going to have. Do you end up having to add some staff positions?
Yeah, there will be, and we did receive some, as part of the stimulus package, we did receive some funding to kind of help. There's some things that, you know, we needed to reconsider that we've spent some money on. Desks come to mind. We have a lot of tables at elementary school. It's hard to space with tables, so we had to spend some money on some furniture. But we will set some money aside for staff to do some distance learning. We do have a survey that's going to go out here this week. We did one at the beginning of the month to just ask the question. We won't lock parents into that yet, but just to get an idea of how many of our kiddos and parents are comfortable either in person or remote learning. We'll do the same thing with our staff to get an idea. We met with staff last week, several staff. We're at about 80% right now of our staff that are comfortable coming back. About 80% of our parents and students also indicated they're comfortable coming back. Now, those numbers can shift. They can shift quickly. So we'll just need to reassign staff and work with staff on the distance component and the in-person component.
Now, is there anything with the teachers dealing with just distance kids where, just to make numbers work better and flow better, because it's online, that you could have a teacher dealing with kids from more than one school?
Yeah, it's likely. You know, if we average, we have about 450 students per grade level. That's about where we're at, K-12. So, you know, we can anticipate, you know, we might have a teacher doing, you know, a third grade classroom, and it might be students from every school represented in there. That's likely what we'll do.
Interesting. We're going to take a break and more when we come back on Inside Douglas County. Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools. They interview a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, News Radio 1240 KQEN. Superintendent Jared Corden, Roseburg Public Schools, in with us this afternoon, talking about plans for the upcoming school year. Now, last spring, you had to essentially find a way to roll out online learning almost on a dime. Do you feel like kids lost 3 to 4 months of education in a lot of ways?
Well, I think by many indications, there was a learning loss for many of our kids, undoubtedly, this spring. I think that loss was disproportionate. It really depended on the kid and their situation. We do anticipate, and I will say one thing about that. I want to make sure there's not blame that's cast on parents and staff. I would say the rollout was much more, I take responsibility on that rollout piece. It was more of a district issue. Than a parent challenge or a staff challenge. We had not invested in the kind of technology infrastructure and design that we should have, and we were playing catch up. And I believe things, we've got a plan to do better with that this year. But yeah, certainly I think there was a loss for many of our kids, and I anticipate we'll have kids that could be 6 months, maybe a year behind, based on where they were at in the spring. And that is a consideration as we bring kids back, or whether we're doing this remotely, however we do that, that we get a sense of where kids are at, make sure they feel comfortable and safe, and we move quickly to get learning going again.
And not just in Roseburg. I mean, things we've had on various programs on this station from around the country talk about that same challenge, because many districts, I mean, this was something that you, if you had planned to do it for other reasons, you would have spent a year or two mapping it out, and literally it was done during a long spring break.
Yeah, and we had people really doing their best and really trying hard to provide lots of opportunities. I think for parents, it did get a little... It was a little bumpy for parents and kids. It was something we hadn't done before. We were able to get, you know, about 2,000 Chromebooks out and help with Wi-Fi access and provide meals for kids. And I think there's some things we did well, but it was a lot of new learning for us as well. And I think it was an adjustment for our staff and our kids. And there were some successes with it, but we're looking forward, you know, in the event that we're doing more distance learning this upcoming year, to do a better job with it this year.
So what happens over the summer with those Chromebooks and things that came back and then will be going to somebody else possibly next school year?
Yeah, we received most of those back. There were questions about, should we, are you going to get these back? I felt, I have a high level of confidence in our community, and we received nearly all those back in really good condition. We've got those ready to go out here here in the fall.
And that was, you know, even just the supply angle of that, were you able to go out and purchase more, or is that something you're looking at?
Yeah, we've actually have a purchase in for some more. We will need some more for next year. And those are always kind of on a replacement schedule as it is. So we were able to order some more. Haven't seen them yet. As you know, supply chains have been a bit of a challenge with a lot of back ordered material on the PPE side of things, but certainly on technology as well. We're hoping they're scheduled to be delivered mid-August.
Wow, and that's cutting it a little bit close.
It's cutting it close.
You've got school districts all over the country doing the same thing. Even in our building, some computers that we had ordered just before all of this in March, we still haven't seen yet. And so, yeah, that poses for an interesting challenge. So for the in-person classes for elementary, if you have that, talk about busing. How do you address the need for more personal space?
Yeah, busing is something we've talked quite a bit about. You know, the initial recommendations that came out from the Department of Education and the Oregon Health Authority had 6-foot spacing on buses. So to give you an idea, we can fit on an elementary bus 72 elementary school students. That's 3 in a seat. And we don't have extra routes per se, so we operate in that capacity issue of not having, just having enough, if you will, but not having always a lot of extra space. So the 6-foot spacing would change 72 students on a bus to 9 students on a bus.
Wow.
So pretty significantly. And so we addressed that with the Department of Education and said, there's just no way for us to even consider in-person learning with that requirement. So that moved to a recommendation. That recommendation then moved to 3 feet of space, which would put about 23 kids on a bus. Still problematic. So what the Department of Education has done is they've moved from, well, this is recommended. They're recommending 3 feet of space on a bus, but but they're having other requirements. For example, bus drivers wearing face coverings, for example. So our current model, basically, there wouldn't be the physical distancing requirements on the bus in order. The model we have essentially, you know, doesn't call for that because it's not possible. First student who we contract with for busing services let us know we'd need 3 times the amount of buses with the 3-foot spacing than we currently have.
And you can't, even if the funds were unlimited, you can't just get that many buses on a dime either.
Yeah, if you think Chromebooks are hard to find in a couple of months, try to find a bus and sometimes a bus driver to fill that role as well.
What about athletics? Boy, that's a big question right now.
Yeah, it's a question that continues to be asked. The OSAA released a statement last week, and personally, I don't think it provided the level of clarity I was hoping for. No pun intended, it was punted a little bit on the decision. They postponed the start of some sporting events. They said that a few sporting events couldn't happen in the current guidance from the governor. That was football, I believe, cheer and dance. But the practice schedule remains the same at mid-August. And they postponed for several weeks the start of contests happening to, I think it's the 23rd of September, if I remember right.
And in some states, like Washington, has moved things like soccer and certain other sports to spring, which is sort of across your fingers and hope that you can do it by spring type of thing, which poses a whole another set of logistical things and issues when you get to that point.
Yeah, there's going to be certainly some scheduling challenges. I know California just made the across-the-board decision around fall sports being postponed. So we've yet to do that in Oregon. It's leaving some kiddos in limbo and some school districts in limbo. Hopefully there'll be a decision on that that's more uniform soon.
And if you get to the point where sports is happening at some level again, then you get into the travel question. Do you leave the county? Do you just play close to home? Do you play schools that are maybe not the same size just because you're closer? And also the busing issue as well, at least with older kids, maybe you get them to take their own car or something.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, watching what's happening in the NBA in Orlando right now, and, you know, in that bubble, which is very, very contained, and daily testing, they've still been unable to have cases not be, you know, happen there within that bubble. And I believe even in the major leagues, I think there's a couple games postponed tonight, I heard. The question of OSAA and sports is still one that we need to hopefully get some clarity on. And that's been maybe confused a little bit by some of the other sports venues, the club sports and things that are continuing to go forward. We're hoping to hear something from OSAA relative to sports for the fall.
So normally, most administrators, I think it's July, take part of the summer off. Is anybody really getting a break this summer?
Let's just say it's been a unique summer. There's certainly work to get done. I hope people are finding some time to be with family and friends and get away a little bit. But there's, you know, our responsibility is to make sure we're ready for our kids. And so that's the expectation first. And so, yeah, I think some people have been able to do maybe get away a little bit, but there's been some expectations for people to be available.
About 30 seconds left. What's the role of the school board in all of this?
Well, the board plays a critical role, really, in determining how we move forward. We've learned some things about governance around, who can actually close a school. We haven't really talked about this before in the state. Come to find out, a local public health authority really can't close a school currently. It's a superintendent and a board who could do that. So the board plays a critical role in how we design our programs and what the governance structure looks like as we move forward.
Well, I'm sure this is going to be a to-be-continued situation.
I think so.
Superintendent Jared Corden, Roseburg Public Schools, thanks for coming in.
Yep, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
1258 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.